Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 75 with this week's special guest, Arthur Tebble.
This week on the podcast, Syria gets more crazy by the moment, but luckily Al Jazeera America launched just in time to give us the facts no one else would.
And only 50 years later, MLK's I Have a Dream speech is finally front page news at the Washington Post.
Plus, Bradley slash Chelsea Manning's surprise announcement sparks an entire week of pronoun debates.
And serial sexual harasser Bob Filner finally resigns as the mayor of San Diego.
Ted Cruz doesn't realize he's Canadian, despite having been born in a Canadian hospital in Canada.
And the New York Times gives an ambivalent endorsement to Christine Quinn, and Lila is furious.
Plus, America's long history of secession finds its latest example in the potential new state of North Colorado.
All this and more. Plus, don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. This is Brain Trust Live.
We have, again, a special guest. We've been doing really well with our special guest invitations. Today we have my friend Arthur. Arthur and I went to high school together, and he's lives in L.A. now, like
us. I do, yeah.
And we are both sort of vaguely involved, I think, in the comedy and writing world.
Yes, vaguely is the right...
It's right for me, too. Vague is about as exact as I like to get when it comes to my my comedy connections. But you are also somebody that is informed about politics and talks about politics.
Yeah, and
has a cell phone.
My phone off. Cell phone owner, Arthur Tebble.
Exactly, and that's why we invited you on.
We wouldn't have a non-cell phone owner.
No, that would be embarrassing.
It would be a dangerous proposition, I think. Exactly.
It would be a disaster.
Find one, though. I want an interview with someone who lives in Los Angeles and doesn't have a cell phone.
Yeah. That's true.
Well, that's not a homeless person.
Right.
That's right. Very fish in the
barrel. I have often in L.A. felt like I don't have a cell phone because the reception has been conspicuously terrible for the entire time I've lived here. When I first moved here, you couldn't use your cell phone anyway, so it didn't matter if you had one. I was just a phone-less person.
Yeah.
So, but then the iPhone came around. There was mass revolution. In any case.
Should we talk about the history of the cell phone?
Let's do that right. Let's just do a long... let's just go into a long segue about the cell phone... The history of cell phone reception in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
One of the most interesting topics.
Yeah.
And a topic we have no actual facts about.
That's fine.
Using anecdotal.
We can make them up.
Yeah.
But we have some facts this week, and it's all thanks to the fact that Brent now has Al Jazeera America.
I do. It's so exciting. Just launched this week. And I've been sort of watching it obsessively and have realized that there's sort of like a lack of news reporting going on our news stations, which I sort of already knew, but it really became sort of like crystalline this week when I was able to get some actual sort of reporting,
and
specifically on Syria. I found out everything I needed to know in like one 15-minute story.
Yeah, and then I watched it later, and then...
And you were like, oh.
I was like, oh, yeah, this just sets everything up for...
Well, I haven't. I don't even know what... What
I have it on DirecTV.
Okay, DirecTV.
It's not on Time Warner.
It's not on Time Warner. And Time Warner
and CBS
was suspicious.
It's still not on Time Warner.
Right. Showtime. It was suspiciously absent from Time Warner. Time Warner really didn't want Al Jazeera America because everyone was concerned that there was going to be some sort of massive uprising if people tried to get news from a news organization based in the Arab world.
I think while not giving me CBS, they should give me literally
every
available
other,
channel.
Oh, well, I'm having a big week because
they're giving you Stars.
Yes.
Stars Family.
Stars Family. Oh, and you're getting the tennis channel during the U.S. Open. Because the U.S.
I thought
Open
it was only
on
in
CBS.
New York.
Oh, is that only in New York?
I don't know. I made that up.
see, we're making it up as we go.
I am canceling Time Warner this week. This is the week that I'm doing it. I'm just getting rid of cable. I just got an Apple TV. And
but Breaking Bad isn't over.
Well, life will have to move on. Breaking Bad can be accessed at my place of employment, among other things. I'm throwing in the towel on Time Warner.
My Time Warner DVR broke this week. Like, my scheduled recordings don't record anymore. Like, it sends a new episode, they just don't happen. So I think that might be it for me. And
that's
them.
It.
I called them, and I called them a few months ago and threatened to cancel, because I just do that every once in a while, because it's too expensive. And they were, like, not willing to hear me. Like, it was like, and this time I called, and they weren't surprised to hear that I was about to cancel, because I think everyone is doing it.
Yeah.
It was not really news. It was a whole endeavor that I went.
But we also just watched like an hour long documentary about like a world famous Cuban ballet dancer. Yeah, so Lila's head almost exploded during that.
Yeah, that's basically everything that I love in the world, right there in one SD broadcast, one sort of fuzzy SD broadcast. So that's basically everything you could need in a news channel: Cuban ballet. News.
Well, no, you say you watched a 15-minute report on Syria. I can't remember the last time I watched a 15-minute report on anything.
Well, yeah, that was what I was saying. Like, I mean, it's a long time to certainly talk about anything. And that's there have been other shows that I've watched too that sort of like have sort of like more full length. Like, they did like a whole like roundtable about like the state of our like solitary confinement in our prison systems, and they had sort of like this director of a documentary about. Storing nuclear waste and stuff, and it's just sort
it
of like
the
it's
worst
sort
name
of like.
Ever, by the way, what was it? The documentary.
Oh yeah, Into Eternity.
Into Eternity. Like, don't call it that.
Oh.
That doesn't mean anything.
No, that's
but
mean
it's on later tonight. Yeah. DVRing that too. I've been DVRing Al Jazeera America.
My mom has been writing angry letters to Time Warner because they don't carry Al Jazeera. That's been her mission for a while now. Because my parents got in the city, they would get Current, which was which is what Al Jazeera is on now. But in upstate New York, where they're living now, they have Time Warner again, and Time Warner has been sort of like conspicuously absent in even trying to deal with it. And so it's been like a mission to get Time Warner to know what's what.
Every time I think my mother is the alpha progressive Jewish old lady in New York, I feel trumped when I hear about it.
If anybody could get Al Jazeera America to be carried by Time Warner throughout the country, it's Carla Nordstrom.
My mother. Let's hope.
Yeah.
Maybe I would go back to Time Warner if they could give me some news. But in any case, we learned a lot about Syria because of all of this, which
right.
we had not previously been reporting
thankfully,
much
because
on.
Because, as you know, we don't really like to cover stories
covering
like this
international news.
just too many things you need to know.
Too many
it seems
things
like
you need to know, and it's only depressing things. There's nothing happy that you need to know. Nothing funny is going on there.
No,
it's
not at all.
It's just facts and figures and things.
Yeah.
Like this week, when there were chemical weapons used and all sorts of people died.
Right. Well, up until recently, alleged chemical weapons.
Right.
But now we're sort of basically sort of admitting
now
that it seems like, I think like a White House official today actually just said that there is little doubt now that that's what happened.
One of the things that I thought was interesting about the Al Jazeera reporting was that they were showing footage of just like scenes of people that had literally like dropped dead in their everyday
life. It was
sort of
upsetting.
It was upsetting. Whoa. It was the kind of news footage that you never see on any network or cable news here ever. That was when I was like, this has to be chemical weapons because what is this mother and her two children just like dropped in front of their house doing otherwise? Like they weren't, there's no blood or anything. It's just people who fall in where they were.
Well, and when 3,600 people from the same area go to hospitals
for
neurological symptoms,
right.
Like, I mean, they didn't all catch the same flu, you know what
right.
I mean? It's like something happened.
Now this is where you guys with your better news reporting might be better than I am. My source in all of this is Time Magazine.
Fair enough.
Who is still presenting it as we don't know which side used these weapons.
Well, and that is sort of...
That's still a discussion.
Still a discussion. And I think probably has been the sticking point as to why we sort of haven't done anything because supposedly chemical weapons was the, quote, red line for the administration and they're
now we're
sort
hedging because now we're at the red line and we're not sure what to do.
So many groups there. Yeah. I mean, there's so many rebel groups there. And, the other thing that I think that has made us not really want to get involved in this is that it's just a big sectarian war, basically.
Yeah,
I mean, we sort of have interests there because Russia's involved and China's involved and Iran is involved and things. But I mean, like...
I guarantee, the only country in the world that's having a big national discussion about whether to intervene in a civil war that's going on in another country. Like, I mean, that's what we're doing all the time. But I mean, that's like, we're the only country that's sitting and talking about unilaterally going in to what is a civil war.
Well, and that's the other thing that I think is holding us up, is that
Obama
doesn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And,
right. Well,
yeah,
and
it hasn't been popular, and
that's a strategy we've employed before that hasn't worked out for us
correct.
So well.
Yes.
And there's like 1 trillion groups that are involved in this skirmish. And there were even, it was spilling into Lebanon this week. Northern Lebanon had a bombing of some sort, and a bunch of people died there too. But there's also like, some weird, like, allies, like, Iran is part is involved with the Shiite sort of end of this battle, and then
which is Assad's government.
Yeah, and then Qatar, which we had a long discussion with. We had a long discussion today about how to correctly pronounce Qatar, and we're going
Nailed
with
it.
Qatar.
That's correct.
Well, if you were to believe NPR,
who did a whole report on this,
literally
which we
1 million
to.
Ways to pronounce it that are all correct with air quotes.
And basically, Qatar is sort of the way that everybody says it. And
Qatar is incorrect, but it's how we've all agreed to say it.
And the embassy was just sort of like, go ahead,
that's
it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, if everyone's agreed to say it,
then
isn't
that's become
that,
correct.
Yeah, right?
Right. There was a very lengthy explanation how to properly say it, and it was too difficult.
If you say it, like, correctly, like the way that someone in Qatar might say it, it sounds sort of like Qatar.
No, I don't like that.
And then
that.
You just said, yeah, exactly.
You sound ridiculous.
Sounds wrong.
Yeah. It's like, have you ever had a friend who insisted on pronouncing a Spanish, like, ingredient, like, correctly, like, cilantro or something like that?
It's Giada De Laurentiis' whole problem.
Exactly.
Where she, like, speaks perfect English and then, like, goes into, like, Italian to say, like, prosciutto.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like,
and
don't do that.
Absurd.
She sounds ridiculous.
So if
yeah.
you say cutter, you sound like a ridiculous person, even if you're saying the word correctly, which I'm not even, so it's fine. But in any case, Qatar is involved in sort of the Sunni end of this battle, as are a bunch of other Sunni states in the region.
Right.
But there's like...
But it's like the Sunni rebels aren't a great lot to get involved
no.
in either, because they're...
No one
I mean,
is the right person here.
And that's the other big problem
here. Well,
that was
the problem
that's
we were having initially. John McCain even was talking about that when he wanted to get involved like he likes
right.
to
it's
do.
Like you don't necessarily want these rebels running this country either. I mean...
No, if...
Whatever the good old days of just going in there and finding the
finding
most powerful
dictator.
Person who loved us and just put them unilaterally in charge.
Yeah.
But then we don't have democracy.
Yeah, that was the strategy we were using with Saddam Hussein, and then we had to renounce that strategy when we decided we hated him again.
Yeah, we're having to renounce it all the time.
Because what we do is we do that, and then we decide we hate whoever it is, right. and then we have a whole problem, and we get them out by claiming that we care about democracy.
Right, it's what's going on in Egypt.
I feel like we can legitimize a lot of sham elections these days that you couldn't before.
That's
I feel like
that's technology.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could just create a bunch of fake Twitter accounts and make it look like these people are as
there
popular as we need them to be. And
uprising of some sort,
right.
a Twitter uprising.
And make them squeakers, you know, all these 52% elections, but like...
Yeah. We could be doing it. That would be better than sending in the military. I'm
right.
sick of sending in the military.
It
just
it looks
leads
like
to
we
more
might.
Sending in of the military.
We're not going to be sending troops in,
no.
is what Obama has said. But it looks like that
we
they may
send.
Be sort of prepping for some potential airstrikes.
Yeah.
But they are letting, as of, I think, either today or yesterday, the Security Council come in and inspect the site
yes.
where this chemical weapon...
But it's, like,
but
sort of too late.
It was,
late.
Like, 5 days ago,
yeah.
and it's, like, been continually shelled, so, like, they're saying that they may not find any evidence
yeah.
anyway, so it's easy to let
saying,
them in.
We're saying that it's almost definitely the government that's using the chemical weapons. I don't know if that's a fact that's agreed upon by all people, but that's what the U.S. government has sort of... secretly been saying, or they've been sort of off the record saying that it's almost definitely the government, and that's, I think, why they're starting to talk like the red line has been reached, whereas before they were pretending they couldn't see. Well, they couldn't, because they didn't have any cable news channels that were showing them the footage.
There was no way for the
there
government
was no
to
way
know
for the
until
government.
This week.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Syria's a mess. Back home, we had almost no news this week, but we did have a big celebration of the 50th anniversary of the MLK I Have a Dream speech, which was a whole to-do in Washington.
Yeah, they had thousands of people there yesterday,
yeah.
and all of the important
and
people were making
every
speeches.
Every single relative of MLK that has ever existed in the world got some news time.
They did, yes.
The one thing that I do fault out
like,
of
great,
four,
we heard an interview from his great-great-nephew yesterday.
Yeah, that was right after an interview with his son.
With his child, with his kid, yeah. So it's sort of like, she's like,
it's
overkill
like an
and
outside person.
Well, at least the son got to go first. Like,
that's
he
true.
Got, he didn't
right.
have to wait in the green
well,
room.
Well, and the son, I think, was an in-studio interview, so that he got extra special treatment.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
at least
the
like great, a car.
The great-great-grandson was live via satellite, I believe.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have that going for you. But there was an interesting article in the Washington Post about how initially, when the I Have a Dream speech happened, they somehow failed to report on it. Because they had been expecting that there would be this big riot at that event. And there was no riot, and everyone was just sort of fine. And so they were sort of caught, they claimed, they were sort of like caught off guard and weren't really sure what to do. And somehow like failed to mention this major speech that was the lead on the New York Times.
All they could talk about was how orderly it was.
Yeah. It was just like an article about how orderly an unnamed event was.
I don't want to defend 50-year-old racism or anything, but I feel like maybe they just have, like, really niche reporters. Like, they sent out their riot guy, and their riot guy doesn't know from speeches, so he's just like, yeah, a bunch of guys talk, no one threw anything, I wasted my day.
Yeah, that's... The Times led with I Have a Dream speech on its cover, so it wasn't like other papers failed to notice that it was a major event, but the Post is, I think, still really embarrassed about it, because... The former managing editor who wrote the sort of piece about how they had failed to do this was an intern at the time and was one of the staffers that was assigned to report on this event. And so I think they've been carrying a little bit of guilt with them, potentially. A little...
Yeah, see, I'd be embarrassed that it was my intern out there at this event.
Yeah.
Because he was the expendable one in case all the reporters got killed in the riot. I'm just...
Exactly. Right.
I'm just speculating on...
Yeah.
But... In any case, the speech is still relevant today in unexpected ways.
In unexpected and sort of upsetting ways.
But so I think that's probably why this event was so sort of massively covered, because this got a lot of coverage.
Well, yeah, and America was celebrating by going out and seeing The Butler in theaters.
Yes. That's been a
surprise hit.
Mm-hmm.
It's
I know.
Like $100 million.
Crazy.
Is it really going to make $100 million?
The power of the year,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oprah can't get her own television interview with Lindsay Lohan to get any viewers.
To get 1 million viewers.
Yeah.
I watched it.
Well, of course you did.
Sorry.
You are not forgiven.
I'm not. No. Oh, I thought you were going to say, you are not sorry. And I was already responding to that.
No, I wasn't going to forgive you.
Because I'm not. But anyway.
How was it? What did you learn about Lindsay Lohan?
That she's still lying about her cocaine use.
She claims 10 to 15 times now. That seems suspect.
She had said 2 to 3, and so Oprah asked her about that, and then she said that she was lying about that, and it's closer to 10 to 15.
Yeah.
Which
is also a lie.
I don't think anyone on Earth has ever done cocaine 10 to 15 times. I think you do cocaine 0 to once, or dozens and dozens. There's no one's ever done...
Not like someone who just uses it responsibly every once in a while.
Well, and it's like, she said that she used it because her drug of choice was alcohol, and it allowed her to keep drinking.
Yes.
Which is, supposedly, you can do that. I mean, it sort of gives you, you know,
we were having energy on your drinking binge.
And I was like, if your main goal is to continue drinking, and you are addicted to alcohol, and you're using cocaine to continue drinking alcohol, and you are addicted to alcohol over the span of years and years and years and years... Clearly you used cocaine more than 10 times.
It didn't just occur to you 10 times that you could get away with it.
I mean...
We had a whole discussion about this in my office because someone basically claimed that there's nothing less fun than drinking on cocaine because it's like you've done nothing. Like, you just come back normal.
Oh,
so you just, like, you spend all night spending all this money on alcohol and then you erase it all by doing cocaine. And then you're just back to zero and it's like you've done nothing, but you've spent... hundreds of dollars on nothing.
That doesn't sound true.
And on cocaine.
On cocaine, exactly. It sounds like it's potentially not a genius plan if you are addicted to the effects of alcohol, as an alcoholic might be.
Right.
It's fascinating, though. It's all I want to think of.
It's just science. Bradley Manning was sentenced, finally, this week as well.
Yeah.
And that was the other sort of big... news. He got 35 years, which is significantly less than the, like, 99 or something that he could have gotten. And he's also going to qualify for parole in, like, 7 because he's got some time already and he's got, like, good behavior or something. I've learned a lot about the penal system from watching Orange is the New Black, but I still don't fully understand how sentence times work because people seem to always get out of jail long before they were... intended to.
A friend of mine recently went to jail here in LA, and he was sentenced to 21 days and served 3.5.
I know. I wonder if it's like jury duty, where you go and you're supposed to serve 5 days, but after 2.5, they're sort of like, well, you're fine.
I think it's like...
Well, it's also when you get short sentences like that. I also learned this during the Lindsay Lohan interview. learned a lot.
Right.
Between Al Jazeera America and the Lindsay Lohan interview, I have a lot of information this week. Because she had the same thing. It's, at least in L.A., it's often due to prison overcrowding. And, like, if you're only sort of sentenced to, like, a short time like that for, like, some sort of, like, ridiculous thing, I mean, like...
Yeah.
You know, you usually get out after just sort of, like, they basically process you, and then they're like, oh, well,
bye. All right. You came.
Good
great.
Enough.
It's good that you showed up.
Well, I think the maximum number is, like, if you're just a real asshole and make everyone in prison's time hard, this is how much time they can give you, but...
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but if you keep quiet and keep your head down, work
hard. We need
hard
a carrot
at sitting.
to get you through.
Exactly. Well, and I think in Bradley Manning's case, part of it is that he was, when he was at Quantico, he was abused, basically. He got abusive treatment, and so part of it is that the time got cut down because he had already endured abuse at the hands of his own imprisoners, essentially.
Well, then I want to see that universalized.
Exactly. meanwhile, I didn't realize he was only 25. Like, I knew he was on the younger side of things, but he's still only 25. He's been in the news for years, so I assumed by now that he was 30 or something. Some other age that where you're almost an adult.
Now, if you're a private first class, you're young.
Yeah.
That's true.
He's only 25.
Yeah.
He's little. And his lawyer said that they're going to seek a presidential pardon as their next step. They're not going to get it.
No.
The White House
not
said that it would, quote,
years.
Get routine consideration. But that's...
Although, like, if he starts getting turned down for parole, I think before 35 years are up, some president will pardon him.
Potentially. He's not going to get it.
He's not going to get it within the 7 years that he is currently serving without opportunity for parole. But I think if he gets kept there for other reasons...
Between now and 2048, I think we as a country will be embarrassed about this and we'll shut him off.
Right. We'll want this out of our hair. Meanwhile, the real news about Bradley Manning this week was that he decided... that he's transitioning to being female and now wants to be referred to by feminine pronouns and be called Chelsea. And he released a whole statement about it. There's a lot of controversy about whether the military is obligated to give him hormone replacement therapy, because regular prisons, I think, are if you're transgendered, but he's not transgendered yet, so it's sort of like a confusing gray area.
Right.
But this is sort of, like, not super shocking. There were lots of reports during his trial that he was having gender identity issues and stuff like that. And he released this announcement with a picture of him wearing a blonde wig.
Yes.
That was, like, all over the news as well. Like, no news station could bring themselves to use the feminine pronoun, though. He, like, specifically says that that's what he wants to have happen. Fox News was the worst offender because they just like, couldn't get... This is not, like, a concept that they can necessarily, like, wrap their heads around. But even, like, CNN couldn't do it. Like, NBC had a bunch of mess-ups. Like, it was just, like, it was, like, chaos in the news this week. Because no one knew who was referring to what. The Bradley Manning story got very confusing. Like, the stories about him being sentenced got very confusing because no one knew who they were talking about anymore. Some places were calling him Chelsea Manning. Other places were calling him Bradley.
Well, and that's what I think, obviously, like, we should respect her wishes to do that, because that's, I mean, what you should do. I think to a certain degree, when you're covering the story...
In the middle of the story,
not even in the middle of it, but really at the end of it, when it's been going on for 3 years, to start calling it the Chelsea Manning story, I think, as a news station, I sort of understand why you would still be like, you know, Bradley Manning, because I think that you just have to be able to sort of, like, have that reaction to, like, know what they're talking about.
Right.
Which is sort of... unfortunate, I guess, that people can't grasp that. But I mean,
cleverly timed announcement on his part, because it totally fucked with all the coverage of his story in a really hilarious way.
Well, and it's a hard pronoun switch to get, even in like general. Like, if this is someone you knew, and they,
well, yeah,
and,
that's hard.
Like, you would struggle, and so I think if it's even less personal, these are broadcast professionals who should be able to read whatever's on the teleprompter. And
quasi,
but someone has to write what's on the teleprompter, and that person has to be comfortable doing it as well. I mean, when this announcement first broke, I hadn't really heard the actual announcement, and I kept being like, who the fuck is Chelsea Manning? And then I thought maybe it was the sister of the football Mannings. Because I wasn't really sure who we were talking about, but I was like, maybe that's it.
And football's about to start.
There's a lot of football news. And so I spent like a full day being totally confused about what was going on.
they picked up Peyton Manning's sister and they're sending her to jail for 35 years.
No.
I thought it was a sad story, but nonetheless. But in any case, so I mean, this is sort of, I think, the natural end of the Bradley/Chelsea Manning saga. So this might be the last week that we have to report on it, but Edward Snowden is still there to take up the mantle. So we still have some, we're going to stop some exciting leaker news.
I think we'll have some trans group outrage over Chelsea Manning in our future. I think that'll keep this.
Like, maybe. This story definitely did take a bizarre turn this week. Like it
did. It could have just been over at the sentencing, and then exactly. It really just like...
Then it just really turned. Went crazy.
Yeah.
There's a very cynical part of me that thinks that the timing of this is so that the story won't leave. That she'll always have attention on her because of this now.
Yeah.
I mean, we did sort of know that she had gender issues. Right. I mean, yeah. That was sort of a reason why he supposedly leaked this was because... He, you know, was so unhappy and was sort of, like, not being paid attention to, like, when he was in the army the first time.
Right.
He sort of, like, went to this place where he sort of was
finding
all this information.
I think also this is partially to keep attention on him because she's going to a military prison where there are not the same types of... They don't separate women and men, I don't think, in the same way in military prison. And there's not the same rules about respecting, like, this sort of thing. No one really knows whether they're going to have to provide hormone replacement therapy or any of the things that, like, a regular prison would have to, which I've also learned from Orange is the New Black. Everything I know about the penal system is basically from that show. Brent still hasn't watched it, and I hate him for it.
I haven't. Sorry. I've been busy watching other things.
He's been watching John Adams.
I don't know how I started that, but I watched it, and it was great. I'm done, though, so I can...
Yeah, how much
I'm
John
free.
Adams was there?
A lot.
Like, 7 episodes of, like... I mean, it was a miniseries, but there was, like, 7 episodes, and they were all, like, an hour and a half or an hour and 45 minutes. It was a real commitment that I got involved in.
But we had a lot of really exciting discussions last week about the American Revolution and the British.
We did.
We have been on a real roll, because I read a book for work that was about the American Revolution, and Brent had been watching John Adams, and so suddenly, we were incensed at the British for, like, a full week.
Right.
Because they were terrible.
Yeah.
They were just awful.
No, so, we're all... Everyone is on board with that.
Well... We just got there.
We finally got there, and now we're in it.
It's like the founding statement of the country.
I know, but don't you feel like now, like, you know, the sort of, like, way that we relate to the British is so different because they're a major ally of ours, and they go into all these dumb wars with us, and, like, they do all these things that you wouldn't think that such an... such a contrary group of people would be involved.
Well, they've had an eventful couple hundred years.
That's
too
true.
There. They have a prime minister now.
We should learn some of that history.
No. We became America so that we wouldn't have to.
Exactly. What's happened since then?
Nobody knows. Or cares.
From King George to Margaret Thatcher. It's just like, whatever, they're over there.
Not important.
What's
important is that they were trying to prevent us from reaching our destiny as an independent nation. Here's something actually that we did learn, though, that was fascinating. Is that most of Canada... I knew that royalists went to Canada after the revolution. That was, like, a thing that they did.
Yeah.
Other people that went to Canada, my ancestors. We're not claiming they're royalists. They claim that they were screwed out of some land in upstate New York by a bunch of investment bankers, like 18th century investment bankers. But regardless, they ended up in Canada with the loyalists. Canada basically is, you know, didn't follow the same path as the U.S. and remained part of the Commonwealth and all of this stuff because it was a loyalist colony forever, and they really didn't get their independence until, like, the Civil War era, basically.
And their national anthem was God Save the Queen until, like, the 40s.
Yeah.
Like, until...
1940, also conveniently the year that all women got the right to vote in Canada.
Oh, that's right, yes.
So they
were
a little late to the game
there.
Yeah. So, despite the fact that I now think of them as very evolved because they have healthcare, I'm feeling okay about the fact that I've often made fun of Canada in the past, at the moment.
I mean, they're still technically part of the empire.
They're still in the Commonwealth.
The crown governor can dissolve the government if he so chooses.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they're...
We also learned a little bit about the rest of the Commonwealth and the UK as a whole, because we were looking up Wales.
Oh, yeah, why were we doing that?
Because we were curious what... Because people from Wales always act like they're coming from a separate country, and we were always like, is that a... thing? Like,
that,
what does that mean?
Are they
is that right?
Are they lying?
Or is that just, like, me claiming that I come from New York and not the U.S.? Like, is that,
we
more,
had to
of like
get
an, I, more of, like, a geographical identification? It is a separate country, theoretically. But they also have representation in the parliament, so it's not so separate.
Theoretically.
Well, it's not fully separate.
I know.
You can't you can't be part of another government and be your own country.
Theoretic country.
Right.
Yeah, it's a theoretical country.
Yeah.
That's like Scotland or whatever. It's the same deal. It's just a theoretical Scotland.
It's exactly the same deal.
Exactly.
Meanwhile,
anyway, speaking of the UK, we have some exciting leaker news related to the Snowden leaks.
Right, because Glenn Greenwald, who wrote all the stories for The Guardian, his partner was detained this week for 9 hours at Heathrow, right? Isn't that where he was detained?
He was detained at Heathrow. He was about to fly to Rio, but he had a bunch of papers on him related to these leaks. And
right, and like his laptop was confiscated.
Glenn Greenwald is dating like some 28-year-old Brazilian.
Yeah, he's kind of hot.
Like, got like model good looks. Like, yeah. Why? How? Where did they meet? So curious.
Yeah.
And how did this guy get involved in this leaking situation?
Well, I don't know.
He could just be a good-looking guy who walks around being good-looking. He wouldn't have to do this kind of thing.
Well, the text of the law they're holding him on, this Terrorism Act of 2000, is like, you can be detained for any information that could be useful to terrorists. Like, that's how it's phrased.
So it's and really what, broad.
Yeah, like, that's anything, right? Like, yeah.
All information.
Yeah.
The fact that British people like tea. Also useful to the terrorists if they're planning poison tea or something. I mean, anything could be useful to the terrorists. But in any case, this was sort of like the biggest kind of like hit on The Guardian, I think. Not hit on The Guardian, but this was the biggest sort of like take on of The Guardian that has gone on so far in Britain, because obviously this was an American leaking American document, so it doesn't really have to involve Britain other than the fact that their paper reported on it.
Right.
But I mean, this is why their paper reported on it, is because it could. But this is sort of, this is not great news for The Guardian. They've also, I think, had some computers that have been ordered destroyed at their offices. And so they're starting to get some pushback from the Prime Minister in Britain.
Right, who authorized
ordered,
this.
Yeah, who authorized
and
that.
And I was reading the other day, actually, too, that supposedly that the Obama administration had been made aware that they were going to do that. I don't know that they necessarily played any part in it, but they knew that that was going to go down.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about all this. Kurt, I don't feel good about computers being destroyed at news organizations and that sort of thing. I'm like, do we know why this guy was, like, traveling with all this information? Do we have any information? This is such a bizarre out of left
field. Well,
see,
that's what sort of is interesting to me, because obviously if they're just stopping him to prove a point because he's dating Glenn Greenwald, like, then that's a problem.
Yeah.
Like, but, I mean, if he is also carrying, if he's carrying a laptop that has thousands of pages of documents that are sort of things like this, then, like, I mean, to a certain degree, if Britain has a law like that, then, I mean,
can they stop him for that?
Was it okay that they stopped him? I mean, you can talk about whether the law is ridiculous, because you can stop anybody for anything. But, I mean, what was he doing?
What was he going to Rio to do with all this? It's like, I'm so curious as to how his trip, because The Guardian was paying for his trip. So it wasn't just that he was, like, going to visit family in Rio.
He was on The Guardian's dime.
On The Guardian's carrying all of these documents. Probably to protect them, because the computers that The Guardian was storing them on were being destroyed.
But why would you, if you had these important, valuable, I mean, not valuable in the traditional sense, documents, why would they be on your laptop? Like, you know, put it on a thumb drive and put it in
your pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Put it somewhere else.
Put it in the mail. I mean,
the mail. A great place to put a thumb drive with important information. FedEx that.
Yeah.
That's a FedEx.
I guess the question is, were they going to stop him regardless, just to sort of make a point, and then...
And then they were like, oh, by the way, this is convenient, because you have all of this.
They got lucky while just hassling him. Yeah.
Right, like that's, I think,
it's a bizarre connection, because how... I mean, like, we know that he's the partner of Glenn Greenwald, but I don't think they're married or anything. Like, how did the customs, or the sort of security people even make... this connection, it must have been because The Guardian bought the ticket or something. Like, it must have been a sort of partially lucky catch.
Or that he was flagged some...
Yeah.
Right,
some
they knew that he had...
flagged him, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They probably put him on a list of some sort and knew that he had a ticket to be traveling internationally.
God. Security. Things I don't understand. meanwhile, Filner finally resigned.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Finally, at the end of this long... nightmare of a story that...
Well, after, you know, I mean, he's been victimized.
Yes.
By the hysteria of a lynch mob,
yes.
Which he knows specifically about because he was in the South.
Exactly,
at
yes.
At one point.
Yes. Well, his Freedom Rider trip to the South in the 60s taught him a lot about lynch mobs.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent 2 months in a Mississippi jail, so he knows what the trials and tribulations of a victim are.
But, like, you sexually assaulting women up a storm and then... people asking you to resign from office is not the same
as a
lynch
mob
in the South.
No. Well, and the way that he termed it, it was like he was trying to make a parallel to Clinton so that we would all feel bad because everyone likes Bill Clinton. And we did feel, to a certain degree, like that impeachment was sort of unnecessary and that he maybe was being victimized on the basis of, or just, you know, in terms of the fact that this became this big story that was not really relevant to his time in office. This is slightly different because he has, there's like 18 women that have filed sexual harassment suits against him. And he's claiming that it's his critics that have, quote, a well-organized interest, or well-organized interests who have run the city for half a century are conspiring against him.
Doesn't sound like that's what this is.
That doesn't sound like that's what this is. Like, also, if they were able to find the 18 women, then they've done a great job, and you should just resign.
Like, they won.
They won.
I'd watch his series of YouTube videos. Like, if he did the conspiracy theorist thing and, like, put together, like, 40-minute set of YouTube videos explaining it, I'd definitely watch that.
For sure. Mm-hmm. It would be fascinating.
But, yeah, right now, he has to shut up and leave.
Yeah. Well, it's depressing, too, because he's, like, the first Democrat they've had in there in a long time.
I know, so that's... Screw that.
And this is like the kind of, this is what California does. This is a Gray Davis, Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of situation where you have like a sort of ineffective slash, in this case, potentially problematic person who then gets replaced by a moderate Republican in sort of like a clever way of getting a Democrat out of office. And in this case, he was stupidly fell right into it. So, but I mean, this is the kind of thing people, this is the kind of thing that conservative parts of California are sort of, like, liking to do. They got the city to agree to pay for his attorneys, or partially for his attorneys. Right. So the city,
they would have probably done anything just to get him out of their hair, yeah. I think.
Well, I love... He said, though, that his conduct was, quote, due to awkwardness and thoughtlessness.
Yeah.
It was... That he was just being awkward. He wasn't sexually harassing people.
That doesn't yet make it
true,
right.
True, yeah.
I mean...
That's...
Even still.
It's just his awkwardness that we should feel bad because he's... Because his level of awkwardness is so extreme that he offended that many enough women to file lawsuits against him.
This is very awkward. I feel awkward as a Californian that this is happening in my state. Like, this is...
That's true.
He's made it awkward for everyone. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I wish he'd been more thoughtful about it. Like, he's not...
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, his thoughtlessness really has become problematic for... Meanwhile, me and Brent have a correction to issue.
Oh, God.
We hate being wrong, but we're going to man up and admit it. Because we had, there had been a bunch of reports that Ted Cruz was naturalized in 2005, and this, it turns out that his father was naturalized in 2005. Mm. So we've been claiming, I think rightfully, that he shouldn't run for president, but right. On the basis of the fact that he doesn't qualify.
And he sort
and
of...
And he we sort of
kind
qualifies.
Of does. Now he sort of does, because this week, in a sort of hilarious move,
yes.
He released his birth certificate, basically, I think, to get rid of sort of like some of
this speculation.
But when it was released, the Dallas Morning News reported that he had dual citizenship
right.
Because he was born in Canada. He claims
and
that
like
he did not know that.
Born there.
So now he's having to renounce his Canadian citizenship.
His secret Canadian citizenship. I would not, P.S., do that.
I know, right?
First of all, there's nothing in the Constitution that says you can't have dual citizenship and be president. Second of all, there is something in the Canadian Constitution that guarantees you free health care. So why you would renounce your Canadian citizenship when you could have it both ways? If I could get Canadian citizenship right now and just have both, I would do that in a heartbeat. It would be amazing.
Must he not owe a lot of back taxes? Like, isn't that why you renounce your citizenship?
I mean, that's the only reason that you renounce citizenship.
Didn't Michelle Bachmann have to renounce, like, some sort of, like,
yeah, some
Swiss citizenship or something?
But that was just because of hysteria. Which is what this is because of, too. This is just hysteria.
Right.
But so...
And the fact that, sort of, like, we said that he couldn't be president isn't any less hilarious. Because, like, he's still... The whole point of the story was that there are so many birthers who think that Barack Obama shouldn't be president because he was born in Kenya, which he wasn't.
Right.
And Ted Cruz actually was born in Canada. So I think that regardless of whether he technically can be president or not, I mean, the story still is problematic for birthers.
Yes. Yeah. It's problematic for his constituents.
Right. And birthers are the type of people who would probably vote for Ted Cruz.
Exactly.
I forget if it was Salon or Politico that said they spent a lot of time this week trying to get a comment from Donald Trump about Ted Cruz, and he was not returning any requests.
God, I would love to hear Donald Trump's response to this story.
There's also been a... I've seen this a lot on blogs this week where progressives started trying to use Cruz's real first name.
Oh God, what is it?
It's like Raphael or something. He has a Cuban first name.
Cuban, right?
He's like Raphael Edward Cruz, and he uses Ted because he's ashamed of
his heritage.
His heritage. But you have to imagine in the primaries, you know, Rand Paul is going to start.
It's like Barack Hussein Obama. Yeah, he's going to be like Raphael.
He's going to be Husseined.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep.
That's just as Bob Vilner was being Clintoned, according to him.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz is going to be Husseined.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I mean, I'm excited for that primary if he does run because there's so much sort of like not even covert racism in that party to begin with, and there are it's going to be him and like one zillion rich white people, all of whom are
and maybe
like,
Bobby Jindal,
and there's going to be like the type of covert racism that you saw in the Democratic primaries between Hillary and Obama is going to pale in comparison to the excitement that we can expect in this primary.
I would think the old rich white people in the Republican Party who are eventually responsible for all this have to still like his father. Was part of what kicked them all out of Cuba.
I know.
Like, how does that?
Well,
like,
that's the other interesting element of this. Is his father is not just Cuban, but he was
a Cuban
the wrong kind of Cuban.
Yeah,
we're just watching a documentary about Cuba, so we're currently very up to date on Cuban history.
But
I've always been up to date on Cuba, but that's because we have the Cuban community in the U.S. is very conservative because it's all these people that left Cuba in a huff after the revolution. Ted Cruz is. Background is not of that kind of Cuban. So that's another interesting element of his candidacy that
I don't know why his father had to leave. I don't know if it's one of those like he just hung around too long and pissed off the wrong person and had to get out of there.
Well,
but
there's a bunch of Cubans in Canada because Cuba's still kind of like poor, so you still kind of want to leave if you're there. Like any third world country. So and there's like a huge Cuban community in Canada that is not as wackadoo crazy.
Mm.
The less wacky Cubans move to Canada because it's like being in the U.S., but you don't have to deal with the Miami Cubans. So I would assume that he didn't have quite as dramatic an exit as... Because if you have a really dramatic exit, you can just come to the U.S.
That's true. You
don't have to go to Canada.
You don't have to go to Canada. No, it's cold in Canada. You wouldn't choose that first.
No, certainly not Calgary, which is...
No.
Yeah.
It's the worst place on Earth.
No, yeah, that's really low on my list of places. It's like above Edmonton.
Right.
And nothing.
Yes, and the North Pole.
Right. And tundra.
And exactly. Right. Just like ungovernmented. That's not a word. Governmented. I made it up, though.
Yeah.
It's a word now. Speaking of the Republican primary pool, though...
Yes.
Chris Christie
just pissed off
everyone
who's going to vote in it. He's done. Exactly. This has always been his problem, sort of, anyway. But, I mean, you know,
he
probably the best person to win a general election, potentially, from the people
from
who we know
pool, maybe.
From that pool. And you have,
I have issues with what you're saying.
And
then.
So do I. But, I mean, like, more fit to win a general election than Ted Cruz, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
So.
True.
But
that's
true. He just signed a bill this week banning gay conversion therapy.
Yeah. Only California's done that before.
Right.
So now New Jersey and California are alone.
And of course, you know, people aren't, his base isn't loving that, basically. They're saying it's taking away parental choice to be able to decide to put their kids into therapy. To abuse your children. Yeah, exactly.
Many of the Republican potential contenders have intimate connections to gay conversion therapy because Michelle Bachmann's husband runs.
Well, that's when this became sort of like
a big thing,
a thing to talk about. Anyway, yeah. I mean, like you know,
it
was
Michelle
going
Bachmann's
on a lot.
Gay husband was
getting involved.
Was getting involved in gay conversion therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
he knew more about it than anyone, really.
Well, he would know. He would also know that it doesn't work. I would think, but he did marry Michelle Bachmann.
He did
in more denial than we can imagine.
I mean, he seems to be doing all right. I mean, he's got a...
He's as well-adjusted as someone that gay can be, I guess, right? Yes, probably?
Potentially. Certainly as well-adjusted as someone that Republican can be.
Yeah,
that's on their flyers.
Can be. As well-adjusted as a gay person can be. Meanwhile, Tom Coburn is talking out of his ass about how Obama is getting close to being impeached.
Close
like,
how?
Shut up, Tom Coburn.
Close how? No one knows.
Tom Coburn is a
troublemaker. He did talk about how
They have a close friendship.
How really great of friends they are. Which
Everyone in the Senate seems to think that they're all close friends. That's a big. That's a common talking point in the Senate is how close they are with the people across the aisle on a friend basis.
I believe that conceptually, right? That like if you're going to spend 6 years with the same other 99 people, you'd want to at least be cordial.
Friendly. Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine that they are more cordial than Congress is to itself.
Probably.
I mean, remember when was it? John Boehner or somebody who called Harry Reid, who said fuck you to Harry Reid, like at the end of the last congressional session.
I don't remember. That was, wasn't that, and it was Harry Reid, wasn't it?
Well, no, someone said it to Harry Reid, who was scandalized, as you might imagine, by the whole thing, because he's been in the Senate for a billion years, and everyone in the Senate is like cordial to a fault.
Yeah.
That's why they hate Kirsten Gillibrand, because she's like talking to them all the time about stuff. And they
she's
just
cornering them in their own party coat room. Isn't that what she did recently? Yeah.
But she is probably not being as cordial as they like things to be. Because they like to sort of keep things on a very sort of polite and friendly and ineffective basis.
Yeah, case in point, they have a coat room when they all have their own suites of offices where they can put up a coat rack. And
they have a lot of fancy lounges. There's a lot of fancy bathrooms. They have a lot of fanciness going on in the Senate.
Yeah.
It's a very... And you even know, I mean, based on... how they sit, because they all sit at these old-fashioned desks that look like they should have quill pens in them and stuff like that. Congress are just sitting in, like, benches, basically. They're just sitting in, like, uncomfortable benches, like, hanging out.
Well, there's so many of them.
There's, like, a zillion of them. And how do they all have time to even...
Too many. One may suggest.
Yeah. One might suggest that. Although, if you end up getting down to 100, you end up with the Senate, which is just, like, the gentleman's Congress.
Yeah.
But, in any case, Tom Coburn is... somehow trying to suggest that he's not sure that Obama's crimes have risen yet to the level of impeachment, but he's pretty sure they're getting there.
Yeah.
He doesn't expand on what they might be.
No.
But they're getting, quote,
they're getting close.
Perilously close.
I mean, after 2014, why not, right? Like,
just go for it.
That's true.
It worked last time.
Impeach him up a storm. It worked last time to create one of the, like, most popular ex-presidents in American history.
I know, right?
Despite the fact that, like, not a single Democrat liked Clinton while he was in office because he was doing patently undemocratic things the entire time. But as soon as he got out of office, everyone felt awesome.
Well, and they won the next election, right? I mean,
so they,
for them, I think it's a win-win.
It's a
2015,
win-win.
Just knock that out.
Exactly. Just, well, Tom Coburn is mostly just in the business of obstructing stuff anyway, so he could... probably get something happening.
Take Obama off that 2016 campaign trail? I mean...
That's right. I'm sure that Hillary and Obama will have such a nice partnership anyway. I'm sure he will be like the Bill Clinton of the 2016 presidential primary season, or presidential election season, where he will be sort of like, not really seen. I have visions of this happening. I know this doesn't seem like a likely story now.
Depends on, I think, where the economy is at.
Yeah.
How much we'll be seeing him on the campaign trail.
Correct, yeah. But I feel like there's probably going to be some sort of awkwardness anyway, because it seems like our primary pool, unless Joe Biden mysteriously becomes very popular, is people that don't have particular affinity for Obama.
Yeah.
I could see a scenario where Biden just kind of falls his way to the nomination.
I would love to see that scenario, because I would love to see Biden fail upward in that way, because then we wouldn't have to... He wouldn't have to stop making hilarious, you know, comments all the time.
Sure.
He could just do that and still... Like, what I don't want to see is him having to be more careful.
No.
I like the uncareful Biden that we have.
What I would like to see is him be sort of installed as the permanent vice president.
Yeah.
Because I think that...
exactly what you want as a vice president.
Everything.
Everything, yeah.
Perfect.
He's
done a good job.
He's doing a great job.
He says hilarious things every once in a while. Yeah. He doesn't mind going to ridiculous events and just... shaking a lot of hands, and
he's got a very charming smile.
He also has managed to get some deals done that Obama probably couldn't have himself. So he's actually gotten, you know, he's
done
more
than
some
many
stuff.
Vice presidents have done.
I think he's perfect.
Yeah, I don't know if he has two more terms in him, but I guess that's a problem with his presidential candidacy as well.
Exactly. Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think he'd be a good vice president for either party, really.
Yeah.
I mean,
he doesn't necessarily have an explicitly political agenda of any sort.
And the tie-breaking vote in the Senate thing is basically irrelevant now, so there is really no reason
There's no reason for it.
Yeah.
I don't know if both sides can run someone on the ticket at the same time.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. was really funny in my watching of John Adams. It was like the issues of the vice presidency, because he was the first vice president under George Washington. It was really funny because like the way that the vice president is sort of now, where they don't really necessarily or sort of have the reputation of not having very much input and things like that. It was really funny because like George Washington would like have all of his advisors come in, and then he would ask John Adams to leave so he could talk to his advisors, and John Adams would be really pissed about it because like he was like, I'm the vice president and I can't even sit in here while George Washington is meeting with all these people who are supposed to give him advice. And
well,
it's
in those days,
interesting
also,
that happened.
You have a president and vice president from different parties.
They
used to
elect
them separately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were. Yeah.
So that's exciting too. Then it's like having a permanent presidential campaign.
Yeah.
Always going on.
Yeah.
Well, and someone who just has a really big incentive to murder the president. Dallas is the second most powerful person in the executive branch.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh God, this has Lila incensed.
Oh my God.
We found this out yesterday.
Yeah, and we're furious. So we brought you last week that Bill de Blasio. We're going back to New York mayoral politics, by the way, that Bill de Blasio had been sort of surging ahead in the polls. Anthony Weiner sort of fell out. We had been...
Yeah, he did.
Rather...
Sorry.
We had been rather publicly supporting him over Quinn because of our hatred of Quinn. And by our, I mean mine, because Brent sort of doesn't...
I'm along for the ride in the New York mayor's race.
So in any case, now the race is really between Quinn and de Blasio. And the New York Times, like a bunch of stupid heads... went and endorsed Christine Quinn, even though their editorial board was split on it, and they had a big argument about it, apparently. But they basically endorsed her because she's the, quote, practical choice, which is what I knew would happen, which is why I was so angry about everything in the first place. Because Christine Quinn is the most practical choice only because she has all this money, and she's the sort of vaguely ineffective speaker of the city council. But she's not the practical choice in terms of doing things that are not things, like doing things that people in the city want done, because she's been really unpopular among her own constituents this whole time. Because she's obviously just sort of like power hungry and vaguely sort of like she's sort of establishment. She's like the Hillary Clinton of the city. She's just sort of like so establishment that she's not really in a position to even want to do interesting things.
Who are her constituents? What district is she in?
I grew up in her district. It's in Chelsea.
Okay.
She's the city council rep for most of Chelsea and some of the sort of like surrounding environs, and she represents. I mean, she gets elected in this district, which there's a few things that you have to be gay to get elected in that district. First of all, so that brings the pool down to a smaller pool already. And she sort of plays that issue pretty strongly in the district. I mean, which you would in Chelsea. But in terms of actual, like, quality of life issues in Chelsea, people are pretty pissed at her. There's an issue in my sub-pocket of Chelsea, but there's issues all over Chelsea with her sort of, like, she's sort of in bed with a lot of development-related interests that have made the quality of life in Chelsea sort of difficult. And she's not really, you know, Bloomberg sort of had these plans to sort of, like, you know, there are nice things like the High Line that are privately funded that a lot of people in Chelsea are not in favor of being partially privatized the way that they are. And I get that, like, that's been really working for the city, like, this sort of public parks thing that is partially privately funded has been, like, a really successful strategy because they've gotten to open all of these nice things like the High Line. But that's been, you know, Chelsea is a pretty progressive district and that's been controversial there. There's been so much construction everywhere, but especially in Chelsea because it looked like it Dresden when we first moved there. I mean, it was like a parking lot, you know, central. And so there's been a lot of construction-related quality of life issues with, like, excessive amounts of construction going on in residential parts of the district and stuff like that. There's a lot of tension in the district because Chelsea has, like, these weird... It has a bunch of, like, projects on the very, western end of it. And it's also got the former Garment Workers Union housing. And so it's got a bunch of, like, old union people living there. And there's been a lot of tension between the gentrifiers and the sort of like old guard in Chelsea. And she's not really come down on the side of her old constituents in many cases. In any case, she's establishment and sort of in bed with Bloomberg in a way that makes everyone uncomfortable because Bloomberg is not that popular in Chelsea, except among some of these new gentrifiers.
Sure.
In any case, The whole point of a freaking endorsement page is that you can endorse whoever you fucking want, and that will help drive support and make them the practical choice.
They even said de Blasio is more ideologically aligned with the times.
Yeah.
Like, in their endorsement, basically sort of also endorsed de Blasio, but didn't.
But didn't. But then didn't do it after they almost did it. In any case, this is what I knew would happen with Quinn, which is why I had been supporting Anthony Weiner despite his sort of sleaziness. Because I thought he was really the only one who could combat this perception that she's, like, the only practical choice. Because he, too, has experience in office that would sort of lend itself to being a good mayor. And he had ideas that I think, and sort of, like, showed an understanding for what middle-class people in the city were looking for. It's too bad that he couldn't just turn off his fucking cell phone and, like, computer and just, like, get on with life.
Wow.
But I mean, but this is what I knew would happen if he wasn't in the race, and that was why he was so popular when he first got in the race, before all of these new allegations broke out, and then Bill de Blasio was surging ahead, and I was so excited, and now we have a fucking endorsement for Christine Quinn, and the Daily News endorsed her also, because everyone's endorsing her, because she is in a position to buy all of them, because she's the Speaker of the City Council.
I think you might be overthinking the importance of newspaper endorsements.
Wow.
Possibly.
I read the news endorsement. I did not read the Times endorsement. The news has always been a rag, and the news has always been conservative.
I'm not worried about the Daily News endorsement. Not worried about anything the Daily News does,
yeah.
Except when they come up with the hilarious headlines, which I'm very worried about because I love it when they do that.
Well, yeah, those are great.
Yeah. But the Times endorsement is the one that irks me, because I do think that carries some weight in the Democratic constituencies that are sort of going to decide this election.
Mm.
Because that's what, as a sort of like Democratic and vaguely progressive New Yorker who is deciding between, you know, who's someone who would vote for de Blasio and not someone who thinks that de Blasio is too far left, that's sort of a paper that you read every day.
You vote here or there?
I vote here now, which is a disaster. I don't want to vote here anymore. I voted here once and I realized that I didn't like it. And now I kind of want to go back.
I don't know. I think that he's... I mean, this is obviously not... Just doesn't make it a slam dunk for her, obviously. I mean,
yeah.
Like, he's
still...
He's still either ahead or tied in the polls. You have to have a runoff if nobody gets 40%.
Yeah.
She's certainly not going to.
And she's never...
And I have a feeling that, like, you know, you still see Anthony Weiner getting, like, 10, 12, 14% in some of these polls. Like, those people aren't... More
They're
than
not
likely
to win.
Are not going to go to Quinn. So if you have a runoff, it still seems like he's got a real solid chance.
Although your establishment people can get out votes better in the
runoffs. That's
true.
The way that the Democratic clubs work in New York sort of
generates
a lot more, you know, establishment votes than not. The one thing that I think we do have going for us is that Christine Quinn still is going to be the speaker that gave Bloomberg a third term, and that is never going to be popular, because that hasn't been a popular thing. That's what destroyed her run in the first place. That's why she's not pulling it 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
Because that, and it's that one thing that she did, you know, aside from the fact that her own constituents feel sort of left behind by her, like, the whole city got sort of screwed by her, so that, you know, people like term limits. I'm always saying it. I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say it 1,000,000 times. In really unimportant news, Anthony Weiner was in a really minor car accident. And that's what he's up to.
Related, unimportant news.
Related, but unimportant news.
Yeah.
Three-way fender bender on the FDR. He's fine, as you might imagine. There was traffic.
I'm interested that fire trucks and an ambulance responded to a fender bender on the FDR. Like, how do
the
we have anything?
The people that were at the scene were like, well, now I get it. Now that there was a mayoral candidate in the thing. It was a really excessive response that was part of why there was so much traffic, I think. But, you know, that's what you get when you're Anthony Weiner. You at least get that. You don't get votes, but you at least get that. Meanwhile, there was an interesting article in Politico this week that is unrelated to all of this. That is about how 20-somethings are starting to start their own super PACs, which is a sort of new move. We've had this super PAC situation for a few cycles now. And basically, the entire election just gets bought by whatever super PAC can afford to buy it. And that's been sort of like the ongoing, you know, struggle within the Democratic Party, I think, because Republicans love it because they have all this money sponsoring their super PACs. But Democrats are sort of, it means that Democrats sort of have to kowtow to these like bigger corporate interests in order to get the kind of money to compete with the Republicans. And it's sort of legal for these people to give as much money as they want secretly, as long as they're not officially part of the campaign. But we also have a lot of new young voters who started voting because of the Obama candidacy and because young voters are now sort of invested that don't necessarily have a ton of money to give to these campaigns, but are starting to form their own super PACs anyway because they're now a bunch of young voters that no one is really advocating for in that world. And Politico ran a big article about it, and it's sort of interesting.
Yeah, it's just interesting in the respect that, like, you know, the young people are sort of, like, getting in the money game. It's almost sort of, it's almost sad,
it's
really,
really,
that they've realized that they have to do yeah. this, I guess, to sort of get anything done or have their voices heard, because you would hope that
that wouldn't be the case. They could just do that.
But,
well, but anyway. The groups profiled in the story were overwhelmingly Republican.
They were, actually. Yeah. There was one, I think, like, from Ohio that was, like,
yeah.
a super PAC to, like, get more, like, Democrat groups, like, started on campuses right. or something like that, I think, was
yeah.
one of them.
It was
but,
like
yeah,
college.
Like, most of, you're right, most of them were Republican, so it's, they're not people who got involved because they were voting for Obama.
No.
Necessarily. But I
Maybe
think that, but no, but I mean, like, I think that you're still right in the sense that, like, it has...
That candidacy galvanized young voters.
Correct.
I think that is why young voters
Whether you
are
voted for him or not.
Right.
Right, exactly.
Well, yes. I think it's an extension of the college Republican system that they have that very well feeds their organization. Like
it
that.
Does.
That's the beating heart of their...
Well, and one of them, the one that I think was the college Republican sort of super PAC or whatever, was talking about how they want... Their whole end game is to get Republicans to stop talking about social issues and to
yeah. well,
to get back to, like, focusing on the economy and, like, turning things around and, like, stuff like that. And, like, I'm sure that I would disagree how they think that we should do that. But, I mean, like, also it's sort of, like,
yeah.
that's good, too. Because,
yeah.
like, I mean,
well, I
I'm all for the Republicans. Stop, you know.
That's why young Republicans are probably feeling compelled to get involved in this element of the political game anyway, is because
they're getting left.
Young Republicans don't like what's going on in the Republican Party at all, because the focus on social issues has been, like, really damaging to everyone.
Yeah,
but especially their chances with young voters, and so young supporters are not seeing the kind of excitement about the Republican Party that I think they would like to.
Although I hear stop focusing on social issues, I don't hear change your
right
policies on them. Just don't,
right.
Don't talk about during the election and then do it anyway.
Right, totally.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what a young Republican would advocate for, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
If you're voting for the party in the first place, if you're still a supporter of the Republican Party now as a young person, you don't care about their positions on social issues. You just know that it's damaging your sort of credibility with young voters.
Right.
It's
hurting
not
your team.
Exactly. Yeah, it's hurting the team. It doesn't bother you personally. You're not a female gay, like,
right.
abortion haver.
No.
That's not who you are to begin with.
Unpack
what's,
that one.
What's the Venn diagram of lesbians and abortion?
Yeah. You heard her.
Yeah, you heard her. that's a thing. That's a potential group that's at risk. To these Republicans.
I might be against people who get artificially inseminated having abortion. That seems... That might be the only limit on abortion I'm willing to draw. That just seems...
Well, it depends on whether they were legitimately raped or not. That's where the line is, I guess.
I've watched the Law and Order episode, yes.
Yes, of course. In any case, our final story is the greatest of all the stories. Because it is... So there's these... This part of northeastern Colorado that is sort of rural and kind of pissed because there's been a series of laws that require, like, that, you know, there's been gun bills, there's been a law that requires energy cooperatives in rural areas to give 20% of their energy, to have 20% of their energy come from renewable sources, and a few other laws that have been sort of on the more environmentalist and or progressive slant that are pissing them off over in northeastern Colorado. So there's now a measure on the ballot to secede, which Brent and I discovered there's a long history of states doing this.
Yes.
So, in any case, they can't just do this. If they want to secede and become their own state, it has to be approved by everyone.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah. One thing I'm not interested in doing is allowing Northern Colorado
to be its own state.
Two additional senators
Correct.
To the United States Senate. That is...
That's
you don't need to get
to
involved
anyone.
In that. No.
Yeah.
Well, it might become a bit of horse trading, because, you know, Puerto Rico has been...
That's true. If we could get Puerto Rico and, like, Maybe like Guam or somebody will need a senator. Then we're talking. D.C. could have a senator.
Yeah, that's
if
true.
If they give D.C. and Puerto Rico a senator, I'm on board for this.
Well, Puerto Rico become full-fledged state. They just trade Northern Colorado for Puerto Rico.
Oh, interesting.
One for one.
Yeah. Mm.
Yes. It's
Drop a new flag.
Exactly. That's a consideration. In any case, there have been a bunch of states that were actually formed by movements like this, which is what we learned when we looked into it.
Kentucky,
for one. A bunch of states formed out of Virginia. People were not happy living in Virginia, as it turned out, in post-revolutionary
America. that's because the people who ran Virginia were jerks that didn't represent the rest of their state. That, you know, they had this, like, we're British aristocrats thing.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
The people in Kentucky were like, we're from Scotland. We hate you.
Right. So Kentucky was the first... Mm-hmm. of Virginia to do this. And as you can imagine, West Virginia also during the Civil War became its own state.
Yep.
But that is also from Virginia, as you might not be shocked to hear. My favorite is that Tennessee was actually formed by what began as a secessionist movement to form the state of Franklin
in western North Carolina.
And it failed. And then, like, 10 years later, they just sort of, like, gave them Tennessee anyway. They were probably just being annoying. Southern California has tried to secede from Northern California a bunch of times, including very recently there was a proposal to do this. But the map, like if you look at the map of where they were proposing to secede, it didn't include LA. It didn't include any of coastal Southern California except San Diego. It only included all of the Republican parts of Southern California.
It was the inland sort of, and like hooked sort of around and left the coast and then up the sort of, it was the map that you would expect.
If they don't want to take the Central Valley, no deal.
They were going to take Fresno, but they weren't going to take anything above Fresno, which I thought was rude.
Yeah, no deal.
No deal. No. You take it all or you get nothing.
Yeah. yes.
Oh, you're talking about cut us off, right? We would need some sort of corridor.
Right.
But also,
we'd be cut off from Arizona, and who really cares about that?
No, maybe we'd be cut off from Northern California, that if they took the Central Valley.
It was going to allow us a straight access along the coast. We were going to keep the pretty part.
Oh.
Which is fine.
Yeah. Have you ever, like, driven up the 5?
It's horrible.
It's awful. It's like 6 hours of hell. Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, Northern Colorado and Oregon were going to sort of, like,
in, become the state of Jefferson. There was some part of Arizona wanted to become Baja Arizona.
That was recently.
It was in 2011.
Uh-huh.
And then in 2011, which is when this call for Southern California to secede actually occurred, Jerry Brown's office responded, "What is this, the 1860s? But so this has not been anything that's succeeded since the 1860s, really.
Right.
Like, since the Civil War era, there hasn't been any state that has been formed based on its own states. But there have been some interesting... more localized versions of this. I mean, a lot of L.A. seceded from the city of L.A. at various points, because West Hollywood is surrounded on all sides by city of L.A.
That's true.
I mean, like, that used to be city of L.A., and it's, Hollywood is still in the city of L.A., so
Hollywood
is just
its own
West,
city.
But it's not
its own very
city.
Confusing.
It's really
Los
confusing
Angeles
here.
Is very confusing.
North Hollywood is its own city.
Yeah, North Hollywood and West Hollywood are their own cities. Regular Hollywood, no luck.
Beverly Hills also
is there.
City.
Is
Beverly
there a
Hills.
Point to it? Like, is there a city tax base that exists, or is it? I always thought this was a county level.
I don't know. I think that in West Hollywood, it had to do with a sort of distinct set of laws that more governed the fact. Like, West Hollywood used to be outside of Hollywood,
right?
And so there was sort of this lawless area that had a lot of saloons and things like that. So I think that...
I think this is more recent than you do.
I'm saying that I think that the history of West Hollywood...
Gold Coast is not a saloon.
Not gay bar. Initially, before all of this even came up.
Okay,
all
right.
West Hollywood was...
Because it came up in 1980.
Right. West Hollywood was already its own sort of like... West Hollywood was not... It was like a no man's land. It was just sort of like a place that you came that was sort of like this lawless... party land that you would go to.
I see. Okay.
And I think...
I'm pretty sure they still had laws, but go on.
Of that,
they also had Russians.
They had a lot of Russians. But no, because of that, I think it sort of developed a distinct identity, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
That maybe at some point in the 1980s, someone was like, you know what? Fuck LA. Because also there's a much bigger... Like, the tax base here is way better than having to pool with the rest of LA.
But isn't it...
But I think it is.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think it's...
I don't know that West Hollywood is collecting their own taxes.
You don't pay any city taxes here? I don't live in West Hollywood, so I don't know.
I don't know what I do.
You get your own city government. You have your own police.
That's true.
Someone's paying for those police.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess. I just assumed it was some sort of county appropriations thing. I also just assumed that West Hollywood rose up to establish really unrealistic parking rules for
that's all it exists for. That's probably how we're, that's how we're paying for everything.
Yeah just oh, that's a permit street. Just hand out tickets.
As of right now.
Yeah. Although even my neighborhood has, like, those rules continue into my neighborhood, even though it's not city of West Hollywood.
There's some confusing things.
There's no turn streets in my neighborhood.
Oh, that's right.
I don't live in West Hollywood. Where do the no turn streets come from?
I'm only 70% sure I'm parked legally right now.
You're never able to know for sure.
You can't always know.
Yeah. No, exactly. Mm-hmm. My favorite is that there was a city in Vermont that voted in 2005 and 2006 to become a part of New Hampshire. Probably because they didn't want to pay taxes.
I mean,
if I were in Vermont on the border of New Hampshire, I'd be like, fuck this. I'd like to be in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
You don't have road signs, but you're right next to Vermont. So you can always drive into Vermont to find out where you are. But in any case, after the 2012 election, there was a secessionist petition from every state in the union on the White House petition website. So this is a pretty popular...
I don't see why we don't just... Why the next logical step of the gerrymandering we've gotten ourselves into congressionally isn't just start drawing up new states. Like,
here's
what we'll put the Hispanics in Arizona, and here's what, like, and that state will be 100%, and our state will be 52-48.
I've actually been surprised that with the amount of gerrymandering that goes on at the state level and at the federal level with congressional districts, that there haven't been any states that have redrawn boundaries. And they tried to redraw the boundary between South Carolina and North Carolina. And a bunch of people ended up in a new state and they were pissed.
Yeah.
People are not happy when you do that. Mm-hmm. And there was a boundary somewhere in, I think, Arizona or Texas or New Mexico where they redrew the boundary with Mexico, and a bunch of people who had lived in the U.S. ended up in Mexico.
That's right.
Which was another problematic.
Yeah.
That's more problematic.
Well, they still have citizens, right? They could still go to America.
They could still come into America, but I feel like the problem there is that anyone can come into Mexico.
Right.
You don't need to have a passport to get into Mexico. So once you're in... Mexico is not fancy.
You do to get back into...
But you need to get back into the U.S.
You just walk... Anyone can just walk over that border? Yeah.
This is what happened, how I discovered this. Because, you know, you go to the airport, they check your passport because you're at the airport.
Yeah.
Brent and I were driving back from Arizona. And
my parents live right on the border.
Yeah, his parents live right on the border. I had decided that I wanted to go buy some prescription drugs in Mexico.
So we
went to the city that is surrounded on two of its three sides. It's a triangular-shaped city that is surrounded on two sides by the U.S. and only one side by Mexico, but it's in Mexico. And there's a parking lot outside, like on the U.S. side of the border. You park there. You walk directly into this Mexican city with not a single person stopping you at any point along the way. Walk into a pharmacy. And then you just go through customs on the way out.
And customs doesn't care that you're rolling back with a bunch of prescription pills?
It's not illegal. There are certain things that are limited. Like, you can't come back in with, like, 1,000 pounds of Xanax or something. Like, there are ones that are regulated.
That's not your money prescription drug. No. If you're going to do this professionally.
Right. But you can go in and get, like... Because people do that... And the entire city that Brent's parents live in is getting all of their medical care in Mexico.
Yeah.
If you go...
Dental work.
There's
anything.
Nothing but billboards along the freeway... Between, like, when you're leaving for Mexican dentists.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like...
And my mom is, like, hoarding all sorts of drugs.
Yeah, well...
Antibiotics, specifically.
Yeah, well, that's what you do.
I take a Mexican antibiotic at the drop of any sort.
Brent is overusing antibiotics. Well, he's one of those people that does that.
Yeah. Whatever.
It's problematic, but...
I was wondering what the incentive was to hoard antibiotics. I don't think we're running out of those.
Well, I know.
And they're dirt cheap, here, too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's true.
But you have to go to the doctor.
You have to go to the doctor. There it is.
That's the kicker.
You don't need prescriptions in Mexico?
No.
You don't need a prescription there.
For anything?
No, you just go in and buy it.
You just buy stuff.
Why doesn't every Oxy addict in the country live within 10 miles of the Mexican border?
That's
well, that may be something, that, again, that you
I think
sort
things
of like,
that
they
are
do ask you
addictive,
what you have.
They're regulated. Okay. They regulate. So because you didn't break a law in Mexico, you're allowed to bring any drug that you want into the U.S. from Mexico, unless it's a drug that is restricted in both places or there's an agreement to restrict it between the border or whatever. You know?
Sure. Okay. So that's what's stopping that from
being... Because I don't, you know, if you came back with like 1,000 pounds of Oxy, they might be like...
Customs is not going to be super...
All you have to do, P.S., to get that is to go to the ER. When I broke my wrist, they gave me, like, 1 zillion Norco at the ER, and I didn't even say I was in pain. I could have taken an aspirin and been fine.
I had my wisdom teeth out, and all I got was ibuprofen.
What? What?
Oh, wow.
They forced Vicodin on me, and then I didn't even use any of it. It was a disaster.
I had a very simple wisdom. It wasn't one of those crazy ones.
I did, too. They just pulled them.
They didn't... They gave me... I was on Vicodin once when we were in high school. Yes. I had my knee operated on, and they gave me a bunch of Vicodin, and I learned then that I very much enjoy being on Vicodin.
Sure.
I haven't had it since. But it's always been like, I wish something bad would happen to me so I could be on Vicodin again.
Yeah.
Well, if something minorly bad happens to you, you can just go to the ER and they'll give it to you. So it's their favorite thing to do. In any case, that's the news.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on
the podcast.
Oh,
this
thank
is great.
You for having me. This is
fun.
Fun way to spend a Sunday afternoon.
Welcome back whenever.
Yes. Yes, we're now pro guest all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we used to not ever have guests.
All right.
But we're enjoying the guest thing. So.
Yeah.
So now everyone can come back all the time.
You should decide how long it is until everything turns over and that's when you start having people back.
Yeah, yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. They just cycle through them all.
Yeah.
But in any case,
We'll be back next week.
We'll be back next week, as usual, and hopefully nothing terrible will happen in between then, but hopefully some news will happen, because we've been remarkably short on that.
Yes. But somehow still able to talk for an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, we can always do that. There's always television, if nothing
that's
else.
That's true, yeah.
I'll tell you about life without cable on our next installment.
Oh, yeah, that'll be a good one.
Yeah, it's going to be new. All right. See you next week. Bye.